This selection comes from the mid-90s, but even so, much of the politics of recent years is so forgettable, you tend to say, who? I mean, I can remember Jonathan Aitken, but I can't remember who Robert Hughes was. He's lost in my memory among the massed ranks of government ministers whose contribution to family values was to have at least two families. But that to one side. Here are some comments on the BBC, Tony Blair, John Humphreys, and others. Tony, your question now. Who wanted to shoot today's messenger?
Oh, well, I suppose this would be about Jonathan Aitken wanting to have a go at John Humphreys, accusing the BBC once again of being biased or partisan or what have you. And he actually described it as being the BBC being the Blair Broadcasting Association. Presumably by this he meant that it's got programmes, but no one knows what they are yet. And he didn't like the way John Humphreys kept saying yes, but all the time in the interview. Presumably he wanted him to be more polite and just say yes, thank you.
This is about senior Tory minister Jonathan Aitken, who accused the BBC of anti-government bias. He claimed John Humphreys of the Today programme interrupted Kenneth Clark 32 times in 10 minutes, but in fact Mr Humphreys only ever interjects when absolutely necessary. Excuse me. Hello? Yes, John, I've got that. Yes. Apparently it was only 31 times. Alan, will you have a listen to this? That was Another One Bites the Dust by the Queen.
Hmm.
No, by Queen.
Another one of her banks bites the dust.
Your question, Alan, is this. Who went doing the right thing to be replaced from the left, right and centre?
This is Robert Hughes, not to be confused with the Great East Seat. This is a chap whose wife is standing by him. Oh, or behind him. Because Mr. Hughes has been in a leg-over crisis and is finally deciding very late to spend more time with his family. They always decide it afterwards, don't they?
Then
he was the Minister for the People's Charter, which is where people have the right to a bit of everything that's going. And Mr. Hughes took that for himself. And he has been replaced by a man who was formerly a member of the Labour government, which just shows how deeply a barrel has to be scraped by Mr. Major.
He's amusingly called Mr. Horam. And the mistress is Miss Oates, would you believe me?
I was coming to Miss Oates, as indeed Mr. Hughes.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Started early this series. Yes.
Unfortunately, Ian got in there first.
What was interesting about Mr. Hughes is that rather than wait for somebody to expose him in the newspapers, he exposed himself.
Oh, oh.
Very curious. He was sort of own exclusive.
I was rather shocked. I mean, it was a man doing the decent thing. He obviously had no future as a minister at all.
This is Tory Minister Robert Hughes, who resigned after admitting he'd had an affair that ended last year, and some of the papers were asking why he waited until now. Actually, he wanted to go 6 months ago, but his name only just came to the top of the waiting list. Jeremy, How Much Ado was more about Rome than Juliet?
Shakespeare, it appears, was a Roman Catholic. Or, as Ian Paisley would say, part of the pan-nationalist front determined to coerce the good, loyal folk of Ulster into a united Ireland dominated by Popish knavery. Next playwright, Ulster the Antichrist. He was a Catholic, seemingly. And the evidence for this is little bits and pieces that Shakespeare's supposed to have said, like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I forgot to go to confession. But people are always discovering things about Shakespeare. Some people say he's gay, some people say he's a Catholic, some people say he didn't write any of his plays, which makes it rather irrelevant whether he was gay or a Catholic. And what nobody's ever really drawn attention to is the fact that he was from the West Midlands, which puts a whole new slant on the way that one should read Shakespeare. Fire upon each fight is an unweeded garden, the grouse to see. Things rank and grassy, night that is this is merely.
Here's an item from the Birmingham Post.
One of the mistresses of disgraced TSB boss Graham Doughty says the bank will have difficulty in recovering some of the cash he stole because she invested it in £5,000 worth of breast implants. Last night, a spokesman for the TSB said, "These things are in the hands of our solicitors."
We start with a cutting from the Careers Organisation Bulletin, read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted, man's work on nuclear fissionable isotope molecular reactive counters and three-phase cyclotronic uranium photosynthesizers. No experience necessary.
From the Leicester Mercury, it says, bargain footwear for all the family, full-length boots now £5, ankle boots from £9.99, ladies' shoes, buy one, get one free.
The producer wants me to do this one. Because the Chippenham Deanery Synod News fell on his mat this morning. And it says, item 3, Diocesan Synod Report. Owing to the difficulty of finding any member of the Diocesan Synod who had any recollection of what had taken place at the last meeting, there was no report.
From the Synod to Germany now, and Vincent Hanna's comments on a news item from the Fatherland.
Well, in keeping with the style and tradition of the programme tonight, my piece comes from a German newspaper in Bremen via The Big Issue, which concerns the fearful fate of Herr Günther Burpus. Herr Burpus, aged 41, mislaid the keys to his house and attempted to crawl in through the cat flap. Unfortunately, he got stuck halfway and couldn't get out again. A passing group of students then spotted him and decided to take advantage of the poor man. So they removed his trousers, as you do, painted his buttocks bright blue and stuck a daffodil in his bum and erected a sign saying, "Germany resurgent, an essay in street art, please give generously." Passers-by were assured that Herr Burpus's screams were all part of the act and he remained stuck there for 2 days. He was only freed when an old woman called the police. "I kept shouting for help," said Herr Burpus, "but people kept saying, 'Very good, very clever,' and throwing coins at me."
And your question is, who planned a welcome for the other side at the seaside?
This is his dear Dottie O'Grady, a seaside landlady in the Isle of Wight. Now, the great question of the ages, was she a German spy? Or was she just, we're not allowed to say this word on the BBC anymore because it's politically incorrect, but I'll say it anyway, a loony.
She was a seaside landlady. They're all Nazis. I didn't know anybody would be surprised at this.
It's all about Dorothy O'Grady, the Isle of Wight landlady, who apparently spied for Germany from her Sandown guest house. Mrs. O'Grady played the part of an eccentric rather than a spy. When arrested by soldiers in 1940, she said, "I suppose they got the idea I was a spy because I was wearing a little swastika flag on my coat." We don't know what the training courses the Germans sent her on, but camouflage obviously wasn't one of them. The authorities found her hotel full of detailed plans of beach defences of the Isle of Wight, together with a booking on the car ferry to Portsmouth for a party of 27 Panzer divisions. They also intercepted a Morse code message telling the Germans only to invade between 7 and 8 if they wanted a hot bath. Alan.
I, by coincidence, have a gardening piece as well, but it's topical. Well, I mean, it would be 50 years ago. It's from the Bournemouth Evening Echo. It says, "Mrs. Irene Graham of Thorpe Avenue, Boscombe, delighted the audience with her reminiscence of the German prisoner of war who was sent each week to do her garden. He was repatriated at the end of 1945, she recalled. He had always seemed a nice, friendly chap. But when the crocuses came up in the middle of our lawn in February 1946, they spelt out Heil Hitler."
Tony, how might we come back to this question in the future?
Well, any way you like. I'm answering it now. I think this is a question about Stephen Hawking.
Right.
Because he's actually giving some credence now to a theory that he previously ridiculed, time travel. But he now reckons that if you kind of combine, Einstein's general theory of relativity with quantum theory, that you can actually travel in time. And I've actually believed this for years, ever since I was born, 3,000 years ago, to a family of cave-dwelling hunters just outside Stonehenge. And it is a possibility, I suppose. In a sense, in a small, infinitesimal way, we all travel in time a little bit every time we put the clocks back, don't we?
What?
Solid grasp of Einstein.
Yeah, I think so. But But I think what he's referring to is greater time travel, like the sort of things that Doctor Who used to do or they did in Back to the Future. I've always thought that since Back to the Future is actually a film about time travel, I always thought that Back to the Future 3 should have been released first.
Yes, you're allowed to applaud him. It's
well,
all right.
I'm trying to grasp this. We haven't discovered it yet, how to travel in time. But when in the future they discover how to travel in time, they will be here. Right. How do we know they're not here now?
Well, I am.
No, you were 3,000 years ago.
Well,
how do I know you're not from...
Well, I dotted around a few times, haven't I? I don't just do it once. This is my holiday at the moment.
Well, it's a pity. I mean, were you from the future, you'd be able to tell me things like, you know, how much fags are going to go up and whether Blair will get in.
It's very bad news for the National Lottery, isn't it?
Ian, how have one's chips gone to the dogs?
Royal family? One?
Yes.
One's chips.
The Queen?
Yep.
We've had that record. Where are we?
Cocker Spaniels.
Cocker Spaniels eating
British
chips.
Council,
very big story. I saw it.
Any more clues?
No, just answer it.
All right. It's the Queen's Cocker Spaniels, which have been given barcodes. This is true. Two of her Cocker Spaniels have had silicon chips implanted in them so that when they run off, you just get out your scanner and they come beaming back somehow. But the really striking thing about them is that they're called Oxo and Bisto, these royal dogs, which struck me as a bit down market, really, for the richest woman in the land. So and all her dogs Oxo, Bisto. You know, they've probably got other ones called Pot Noodle.
What do you do? Just like a television remote control? You just press it and the dog blows up?
It's not a barcode. I mean, it would be a bugger going through Waitrose. Take your spaniel and it costs you £437 3/8.
Six dogs or less.
Imagine the girl holding the dog up by the scruff of the neck. How much a spaniel, Doreen? It refers to Queen Spaniels that have been fitted with electronic microchips in case they go astray. Her Majesty has also asked if Fergie could be fitted with one of the devices. A buzzer will sound if she ever gets lost and everyone will go out and start celebrating. Now then.
Vincent, you're questioned now. Whose busty assets should be barbecue?
Lucky
fellow.
I wanted this one so much. This is Barbie, who is a threat to the stability of Iran. And a fatwa has been slapped on Barbie. The sight of blonde bimbos in expensive clothes with dyed hair is enough to destroy the culture of that great country. The chief fatwa imposer said, "Our children must be protected from this evil Western style of living in the shaping of the body, the voluptuous fullness of the lips, and the blonde styling of the hair." So, no more trips there for Michael Heseltine.
You're absolutely right. But a new Barbie doll that takes account of Middle Eastern sensibilities is being produced. It's covered from head to foot, wears a yashmak, and for added realism, the hands are removable. Now,
you walking home alone in the dark afterwards.
Yeah. Andy, have you brought a cutting for us?
I'm indebted to Mr. Kane Newman of Stevenage, who sends me this. A Milton Keynes coven of white witches this week won its battle with the council to use derelict land for its ceremonies. High Priest Martin Propp told The Guardian rituals included lighting a fire with spiritual significance and also enabling witches to cook jacket potatoes.
From veg to meat now, but still Andy Hamilton. In the 90s, Andy became a stalwart and much valued member of the panel.
I presume this is a question about the big story of the week, the big dilemma about what to do about these poor, doomed bovine creatures with spongy brains, whether we cull them, incinerate them, or just vote them out at the next election.
You heard it here first, Major.
And this story, I think it is worth tracing this story historically, because it began literally and metaphorically with snouts in troughs in the late 80s, when the farming community or somebody decided that in fact the good Lord had made a mistake in making cows herbivores, that their natural diet was obviously diseased sheep, which Mother Nature would have gone for if she'd realised it was a cheaper option. And presumably, in justification for this, they would argue that if you liberated a herd of Frisians onto the plains of the Serengeti, after a while, you'd soon find them lurking in the long grass alongside the leopards and the cheetahs, you know, waiting for a diseased wildebeest to trot by so they can jump out on him and down him with a hoof and ruminate him to death. But
Tony, who recommended A-level head to stay on form?
Well, this would be the review by Sir Ron Deering.
Quite
the education system. They asked him to sort of simplify the whole A-level system on the grounds that no one could understand it, and to make it as simple as passing an A-level has become recently. He said that there should be more emphasis on vocational skills, not so much emphasis on academic qualifications, not so much emphasis on the three R's, reading, writing and spelling. I have to agree, actually, because, I mean, I think the problem with school is, you know, they don't really teach you anything that's going to be useful to you later in life. For instance, when I was at school, I had to do pottery. And since leaving school, I haven't had one occasion when I've had to make a pot, even in an emergency. They should teach you things that are going to be more useful to you. They should teach you things like how to put duvet covers on. give you advice on what to wear with them once you've got them on.
Start round two with a cutting spotted in the Colville Echo.
Big boys can cry in public and get away with it. The world wept with Prince Charles when he shed tears at the funeral of his uncle. And it understood when he did likewise at the wedding of Prince Andrew and Fergie.
Andy, you again. The question is, what series may soon be appearing in a serial?
Rolf Harris.
That's right.
This will be that thing where he goes around and sees sick animals.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Not such a good programme to be doing this week, of course, but...
look what I brought into the studio, though.
And is Daisy any better? No.
This is what? One I set fire to earlier, yeah.
Give them a bonus for that. They're not going to win. Give them a bonus.
Well, this is pure guesswork, because I haven't seen the story, but I suspect that there's going to be a little plastic Rolf Harris in every packet of Sugar Puffs. That's it.
Close.
Yeah. It comes flooding back to me now. I remember reading that.
No,
well, it's nearly right.
Well, it's plastic animals, isn't it?
Right.
An extraordinary idea of putting plastic animals... there's something about them, if you rub them or something, they...
Are they ill? They put them into the kids' cereal bowl.
Yeah.
Out of the packet, and they're ill. Right. This is wonderful for cheering up your children. And then John Gummer will come out and stick the plastic thing in his child's mouth. You then, what you're supposed to do if you're a smart child is take this ill animal out of your cereal, unless you swallowed it, in which case you're a sick child, not a sick animal, and you rub it with your finger, and the bruise goes away.
Oh, it bruised, yes.
It bruised.
I didn't know...
Can you imagine? I mean, what do we really think about marketing people? They're sitting around in Kellogg's, and they say, here's an idea. Why don't we put a sick plastic animal into our cereal and let a child rub it till it's well?
How do you bruise plastic? Answers on a postcard, please.
Probably by putting it in Kellogg's, which is very frightening.
Also, breakfast is going to go on forever. You want your kids to shovel the cereal down them and get to school. You don't want them sitting there saying, hang on, my goat's not better.
And yet more, Andy Hamilton. Well, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy?
This is a gas bill, Barry, sent in by Mr. Branson.
Good heavens.
How we work out this bill? The amount of gas you have used has been worked out as follows. Take away the previous meter reading from the present reading. Multiply the answer by 2.83. This gives you the number of cubic meters of gas supplied to you. Note, this conversion is not necessary if your meter shows gas consumption in cubic meters. Multiply this number by the calorific value shown on the front of the bill in mg/m³. Divide the result by 3.6 to cover the number of kilowatt hours. Multiply this number by the price per kilowatt hour to give the gas charge in pence. Easy peasy, isn't it, really?
Charles, what have you brought for us?
The Hull News, towards the end of last year, ran a little piece saying, dog owners be warned. Hull City Council's dog warden service is stepping up its campaign against stray dogs. If dogs carry identification, they may be returned home free of charge. But owners of unidentifiable dogs will be charged a fee.
Tony.
Yeah, this was sent in by Mr. Tomlinson from Bridge North. It's from the Bridge North Journal, and it's an advert in the classified advertisements. It goes, Elco circular saw bench. Cost nearly £500. Used once. Sell for £195 due to bereavement.
Alan.
It's from the Manchester Evening News.
Oh.
Police called to arrest a naked man on the platform at Piccadilly Station released their suspect after he produced a valid rail ticket.
What a laugh. Now, Richard Ingrams and John Wells. They have written together for years. Here they are, ad-libbing together.
John, can you name names who are learning about bad investment policies?
Well, this is another tasteless joke about Lloyds, I think, isn't it? About these poor insurance people having to sell everything down to their country seats.
Are you a name, Ducky?
No, Ducky, I'm not really, not in that sense. Of course, I am quite a name in Bognor Regis. But not at Lloyds of London. Not when they ring the lutein bell. One doesn't have to mince out and burst into tears like the other. A lot of other very, very dear friends who are really feeling the wind.
This is Lloyds of London, who've lost £2.6 billion. A helpline for distressed Lloyds names was set up by Geoffrey Archer's wife, Mary, who devised a good money-raising scheme. We don't know where she got the idea, but it involves meeting an old friend round the back of Victoria Station. And the question is, Roy, who popped up on the Downs for his half-millionth birthday?
Well, it may be his half-millionth birthday. Other people say it's twice as long as that. And he didn't pop up. A bit of his thigh bone popped up. It was Roger. Roger.
No,
and extraordinarily enough, we now know what he looked like. And for all these years, archaeologists have assumed that primitive man looked like John Major. And we now know that he looked like Michael Heseltine. Big and bold and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Bad news for Lloyd's names. Did you know this? Just before he was trodden on by a mammoth, he took out personal life insurance. With a crude interest, it now comes to £400 billion.
He should have robbed a bank. Children do it these days.
It's all about Roger, the oldest man in West Sussex. And let's face it, he's up against some pretty strong competition. He's a 500,000-year-old man, believed to be the most ancient in Europe, who lived on a diet of rhino, hyena, mink, wolf and voles. Archaeologists say they don't know what he died of. Chronic gastroenteritis, man. Might be a good bet. His only surviving relic is a broken shin bone, so they do know for certain he once played football against Wimbledon. Here's a report from the Surrey and Hampshire News.
The elderly man who caused a widespread search when he went missing from his home at Tilford last month was apparently surprised at all the fuss. According to Surrey police, he had been late home because he stopped to watch the helicopter that had been sent to look for him.
Andrew. Where does Heidi High come with an X certificate?
Oh, yes, this is a marvellous story in how old Billy must be revolving in that great camp in the sky. This is Butlins, which is trying to change its image entirely. We all have an image of Butlins as sort of Stalag-Luft to Bognor Regis, where you have to keep the holidaymakers in. But they're now trying to make their image a little raunchier, and they're going to have sort of soft porn shows, as I understand. So it's going to have to be renamed Smutlins, it's suggested.
Knobbly bum contest. I can't imagine Butlins being pornographic. Astonishing. Amorous grandmothers.
I was having lunch earlier this week with the Prime Minister's brother, Mr. Terry Major Ball, who goes to Butlins every summer for his holidays, and he was shocked, rigid. And he said, those were his words.
This is at Butlins, which is to offer raunchy adults a weekend. The company is preparing for the sexy breaks by holding auditions for Butlins raincoats. Here's an article from the Daily Telegraph.
A man who tried to smuggle a Thai parrot into Australia in his underpants was fined £10,000 in Adelaide yesterday. Customs officers were alerted by the chirping from his trousers.
Well, thank you, Tony Wilson from Slough, for sending us that.
Don't say it. Yeah, you want to say lucky didn't fancy a nut. I know.
Yeah. Richard, have you got a cutting?
I have something from the Edinburgh Evening News.
Oh, good.
It says, a thief who began sniffing glue he was stealing from a shop in the Brazilian city of Belo Horizonte collapsed when he was overcome by the fumes, upset a tank of the adhesive, and stuck himself to the floor.
Francis.
This is a front page headline, lead story, on the front of the Church of England newspaper last month. Clergy warned, your graveyards could be death traps.
Ian, what have you brought?
Church leaders, including the Bishop of Ely and the Archbishop of Canterbury, have been outraged by explicit safe sex leaflets produced by Huntingdon Health Authority. The leaflets, one entitled How to Have Fun Behind the Knees with Pineapple Rings, have sparked off protests in the Anglican world. Dr. Carey, through an aide, said he did not want to be drawn into controversy, but believed public authorities issuing this sort of material should be challenged to justify and explain their positions.
Alan, what have you brought for us?
I brought one from the Toronto Globe and Mail, Barry.
Oh, good.
It's about a prominent Canadian. It says, Mrs. Edwina McKenzie, who celebrated her 98th birthday yesterday, told our reporter that she credited her long life to having decided, 82 years ago, to get off the Titanic.
Richard, here's a piece of music for you. Did you know what that music was, Richard?
No.
Well, I'll tell you, it was Captain Pugwash, the theme of Captain Pugwash, which is a children's programme.
I love Captain Pugwash.
Oh, good. Well, you'll like the question, then. Who spent 24 weeks going the wrong way back to the start?
It's a man sailing around the
world. Would you help him out with some detail, Francis?
Yes. That's the basic story. It's rather boring.
Yes, yes, he's broken the record for going around the world the wrong way, single-handed. Yes. Except he then got becalmed just off the south coast of England as he was about to break the record. But the best thing about it was he said he'd taken with him an inflatable doll of a woman, which he'd dressed up in all sorts of rather strange leather gear to frighten off pirates.
That was how Captain Pugwash came into it.
Right? Absolutely.
But this is all about the single-handed yachtsman Mike Golding, who sailed around the world sponsored by Group 4 Security. His 167 days going the wrong way delighted Group 4, who actually thought he'd broken the world record for delivering a remand prisoner to Maidstone. Group 4 entered into the spirit of the challenge by losing radio contact for 3 weeks.
My dentist told me quite a good joke about football.
Oh, really?
The day before yesterday, yes.
Would you like to share it with us?
I think it's quite a good joke. It's my bloke is walking down a main road in Liverpool and suddenly spots someone, rushes across the road and says, excuse me, I'm awfully sorry, but aren't you Ian Rush? And the chap says, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. The Ian Rush that plays for Liverpool FC. Yes, yes, I am. God, you wait till I tell... Tell me, do you know John Barnes? He says, well, as a matter of fact, I do know John Barnes. Well, why don't you ever pass him the bloody ball? Sorry, I mean, it's nothing to do with it. It's nothing to do with Reebok.
I suppose
really.
It's too late to tell him we had that on 2 weeks ago. Is it?
Did we hear it here?
Yeah. Well, how do you remember?
Mutt Perkins did it. And my dentist never listens to this programme.
And nor do I.
That is amazing. It came from Dr. Alzheimer's joke book. I'm sure of it.
Here's some news from The Independent.
Police called to a 2 a.m. disturbance at a disused hospital in Chippenham, Wiltshire, found environmentalists playing Des O'Connor music as a humane method of encouraging a colony of bats to move so the building... so the building could be redeveloped.
Alan, what sire will pig out royally out east?
This is about Marshal Captain V, or possibly Captain Marshal V,
was the world's cleverest pig. And it appeared at the Royal Lank Show in One Man and His Pig performing pig contest. And this hugely impressed a talent team from the Emperor of Japan. As this thing was running along planks and going over obstacles and doing all those Sonic Hedgehog things the Japanese like so much, talent team grew aware that this pig was carrying something that would have gone down a tree to Butlins. And they've actually invited this animal to head up the Japanese stud, because it is the best endowed pig that these Japanese have ever seen. I don't know if the pigs had a look at the Japanese, but one way or another, they've reached this mutual agreement. And I think it's Captain Marshall V, who is now going off to Tokyo to start knocking off Japanese pigs in the hope of producing piglets, or pigrits. If we're going to be politically incorrect, we may as well go the whole hog. No pun intended.
Yes, there was.
Oh, no, there was.
There is no doubt that the star of the show, the most constant bringer of goodies, and indeed the oldest inhabitant of the News Quiz, was and is Alan Corran. I left the show in the spring of 1996. Here's Alan's parting shot.
Well, here, Barry, is your brass-inlaid mahogany farewell cutting from the European. And it says, the manufacturers of France's biggest-selling processed cheese, La Vache qui Rit, are considering changing the famous label, which shows a laughing cow. Spokesman Monsieur Raoul Fournier said, when the founders created the product 50 years ago, they wanted shoppers to think our cow was laughing because it was happy. You're ahead of me. But today there is a risk they will think it is laughing because it is mad.
Thank you, Alan. The voices you've heard on this tape belong to Alan Corran, Richard Ingram, Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Clive Anderson, Joan Bakewell, Nick Clark, Peter Cook, Bill Deeds, Craig Ferguson, Stephen Fry, Jermaine Greer, Vincent Hanna, Roy Hattersley, Tony Hawkes, Ian Hislop, Charles Kennedy, Miles Kington, Steve Punt, Andrew Rawnsley, Gillian Reynolds, John Wells, Michael White and Martin Young. Thanks to them, and thanks too for the valuable contribution made by writers Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The Best of the News Quiz was researched by Alison Harbert and produced by Aled Evans.